Where warp meets weft.
Where warp meets weft.
This is Weavecast with Sine Mitchell.
Welcome to episode 1.5 of Weavecast, Weaving for Knitters. This is a special episode that is an introduction to weaving. First, we'll go over the top 10 reasons knitters should try weaving. Then, we'll take you on an audio loom tour. Finally, we'll discuss different types of looms and places to get more information about how to get started weaving. First of all, I'd like to thank Dave of Chub Creek for that wonderful new intro. You can really hear the warp smash into the weft. I really enjoy that. Next, I have to apologize that this podcast is out a bit later than I had anticipated. Turns out my laptop was not up to the task of editing 50 megabyte audio files. My husband, instead of saying, "Hey, hon, why don't you just give this whole podcast thing a rest?" encouraged me to go down to Costco and pick up a brand new computer capable of dealing with those big audio files. So thank you, honey. Confession time. I knit. In fact, when I recently went to the Madrona Fiber Arts Winter Retreat in order to track down Judith McKenzie, I saw so many gorgeous hand-knit articles of clothing walking the halls that I got inspired to, yes indeed, start my very first hand-knit sweater. This is something that has terrified me for years. So if you're afraid of warping a loom or learning how to weave, just understand that people who know how to weave are terrified of knitting. This goes into something that I firmly believe. Anything you already know how to do is easy. Anything you don't is hard. Now, this doesn't mean that things that you know how to do can't be time-consuming or complicated or involved, but if you think about it, everything you already know how to do successfully seems easy to you. Everything you don't, regardless of how easy it is or not, is perceived as hard. I call this my twice-knit sweater, along the same lines of twice-baked potatoes, because the first time I knit it up, oh, not lovely. Maybe if I ever get invited to be a guest host for somebody, I'll tell that story, but it's coming along nicely now the second time around. But I have been knitting for a while, just not sweaters, and the main reason that I knit is woven socks, just not pretty. I'm a weaver, I love to weave, but some garments just really lend themselves to hand knitting. And by that same token, some garments really lend themselves to hand weaving. It's a good thing you're here to investigate the other side of the fence. Today's topic is weaving for knitters. And in a happy burst of synchronicity, after I announced that that would be the topic of the upcoming show, I saw in Handwoven Magazine that there was a book coming out called Weaving for Knitters and a loom being put out by Ashford Looms that's called the Knitter's Loom, which is a companion to the book. And it looks like it would be a very easy way to get a feel for weaving without investing a lot of money. Though the loom looked like you could outgrow it pretty quickly. Coming up, we have the top 10 reasons knitters should try weaving. I'm going to play you in with a little instrumental bit called Knitting Sand by Derek Sonderfand. I really loved this when I found it on the Podsafe Music Network, and then was amused to hear it a couple of days later on Aussie Knits, which is an Australian knitting podcast, which is a lot of fun. And so it's a small world. It's been a very small world this past week. And so I've got a tip for instrumentalists out there. If you want to get your music played on podcasts with the growing number of fiber podcasts, all you need to do is put knit or yarn or weaving in the title and it'll get played. So let's hear a little bit of that and I'll get ready to come back with the top 10 reasons knitters should try weaving. Thank you. Welcome back. Now we're going to do, David Letterman style, the top 10 reasons knitters should try weaving. Reason number 10. More esoteric fiber knowledge and tools can be yours. If you're like me, you enjoy collecting things that nobody else knows how to use. Does everybody at your Stitch and Bitch already know what a short row is? Well, why don't you go and explain to them how you spent all night slaying your reed? They'll be completely confused. You can wow and amaze friends with all your interesting new terminology. Plus, you get to buy more beautiful equipment. Your spouse will be delighted as your rooms fill up with beautiful looms and shuttles and warping boards. If you like beautiful wooden objects and knowledge that nobody else can understand, weaving is the craft for you. Reason number 9, historical connection to the past. Weaving is a very old art form. It's older than knitting by thousands and thousands of years. Anthropologists have found that weaving probably came right after drying a hide and slapping it on your body. So when I weave, I feel a wonderful connection to the very beginnings of humanity when people used threads and sticks and rocks as their looms. Reason number 8. Weaving is zen. Unlike knitting, where you have to keep track of what row you're on and where you do the decreases for the neckline, weaving, you're basically making rectangles. And there might be a pattern to memorize in the beginning, but once you get that down, it becomes very rhythmic and repetitious. And when I weave, I fall into a zen meditation because I press my foot on the treadle and I throw the shuttle and I beat the weft into place. And then I release the treadle and return the beater back to its original position. And it just repeats. It's step, throw, beat, return, step, throw, beat, return, step, throw, beat, return. And when your body is occupied, your monkey mind settles down and does the weaving, and the rest of your creativity is left to imagine and daydream, and I come up with all kinds of great ideas when I'm weaving. Also, for those of us who are not quite so zen, beating the weft into place can be a wonderful way to release aggressions and stress in your life. Though I should warn you that you should save your stress project for a separate loom, because I have a friend at the Weaving Guild who started a scarf that was all lacy and lightly packed, and then her mom came to visit, and they had a few issues to work out. And so the second half of the scarf is very tightly packed and can pretty much stand up by itself. So if you are using weaving to release aggressions, keep that project separate from your happy weaving. Reason number 7, thinner fabric. If you've ever made, say, a tank top and put it on and realized how incredibly chunky yarn knitted can be, weaving is for you. Weaving has a more simple interlacement. Unlike knitting, where a huge loop has to come up and twist around another loop, weaving just goes over one, under one. And so the fabric that you make with the same yarn will be much thinner if it's a woven fabric versus a knitted fabric. You can also use a lot less material to cover the same area. So if you're trying to make hand-spun yarn go farther, weaving is the way to go. Also, many sewing patterns require non-stretch fabric to work. You get thinner, non-stretch fabric, which you can't do with knitting. Reason number 6, lower body workout. Knitting only uses your hands, and let's face it, it's not that aerobic, at least not the way I do it. But in weaving, you press the treadles, and the treadles raise the shaft and work against the tension of the warp threads. So depending on the size of your loom and the number of heddles you have on your loom, it can be quite an aggressive lower body workout. So you can use that argument to explain to your friends and family why you need an enormous loom taking up the spare bedroom. It's not only a fiber tool, it's exercise equipment. You could have beautiful fabric and great quads, and that's a wonderful thing. Reason number 5, weaving is faster. Imagine weaving a dish towel in 20 minutes instead of knitting one in 20 hours. Modern hand looms were originally designed as a production tool for creating lots of fabric. The reason it goes so fast is you can do a whole row in one motion. Imagine if you were knitting a lace shawl and there was just a treadle you could push and all of the loops would open up and you could just throw your yarn through it and then close it and then do the next row. You get to do a whole row with every motion. And that can be very satisfying. And I will admit that there is this thing called warping that you don't have to do with knitting, but you can spread that investment of time that you put into warping over a large amount of warp. So if you put on a really long warp, the amount of warping you do to weave one dish towel is the same amount of warping you have to do to weave 30 dish towels. So once you get your loom warped, you can really crank out those Christmas presents and gifts very quickly. Something to think about next November, huh? Reason number four, exercise your brain. Learning new stuff keeps your brain limber and healthy, and there's a lot to learn in weaving, and there's a lot of math and science involved. You don't have to do the math and science. You could, as with knitting, just stick with given patterns, read Hand Woven Magazine, and just follow it to the letter. But once you start designing your own cloth and figuring things out for yourself, just like with knitting, there's a lot of math involved, and your brain will get stretched in interesting and creative ways, and you will fend off diseases like Alzheimer's and dementia and stay young and witty all the days of your life. Reason number three, use up your stash quickly. Because weaving is a production tool, you can weave off yarns much faster than you can knit them. So in theory, this could cause your stash to diminish much, much faster than you could ever do with knitting. Now, in reality, this is a total lie. Taking up weaving will only add to your stash. But this argument is good when you're trying to convince friends and family why you need to put that loom in the room. Oh, honey, just think, if I weave, all those boxes of yarn in the garage could just go away. Okay, don't let them listen to this podcast. Reason number two, ergonomics. I've been reading a lot about knitters and the sad, tragic day when they develop the claw, when their hands have just been crippled by the intense amount of knitting that they have subjected them to. And this is really not necessary. If you break up your fiber crafts so that one week you knit, the next week you weave, you will use all the different parts of your body in different ways and prevent repetitive stress injuries. When you work out, they say, keep changing it up and your body will stay stronger and learn faster. Same thing with fiber arts. It's not that you're jumping from thing to thing. You're just ergonomically cross-training. And now, the number one reason why knitters should take up weaving, knitted pants. Some things should just be woven. So that's it. Next up, we have an audio loom tour.
Outside, or the full moon's light on a typical night. True. Maybe it's my attitude because I am a cynical bastard and I'm the mood for you. I'm a son of a gun, it's perpetual fun, and I'm young, I don't know what I'm saying. I got a one-string song, won't you sing along when you hear the chorus playing?
Hello, and welcome to my weaving studio. I am downstairs on location, and I'm using a headset microphone, so if my voice sounds a little bit different, that's what's going on. I thought this would be a lot easier than trying to carry my huge mic all over the loom room. What I'm going to do today is I'm going to give you an audio tour of a floor loom, and mine is a baby wolf, so it's a jack loom, and hopefully by the end of this podcast, you'll know what that means. So I was trying to figure out a really
fun and interesting way to describe a loom that would work over radio and just not bore you, I decided I would give you a day in the life of a warp thread. A warp thread is the thread that in fabric runs longitudinally or along the length of the cloth. And when you look at a loom and it's warped up, the warp threads are the ones that are going up and over and through the loom, waiting to be woven off. That's why I used One String Song as our theme song. So we are all going to become one string, and we are starting life in a meadow on the back of a sheep. We're bursting out up through the sheepskin and embracing the sunshine and just really enjoying the breeze and the smell of wildflowers and mown hay. And then suddenly, we're shorn, and we get carted, which isn't very fun for us, you know, get stretched and pulled, and we get drafted into a pin drafting, and then we get spun, and then we get plied with other pieces of fiber. And the next thing you know it, we're all wrapped around a cone and sitting in a yarn shop. A bright-eyed person comes along, picks us up, marvels over our color and our texture, and pops us in a bag and brings us home. Then we find ourselves on the floor, sitting under a rather interesting wooden frame. This wooden frame looks like the unwieldy love child between a coat rack and a picture frame. And it's got pegs all over it. It's got pegs on the top, and it's got pegs along the side, and even pegs on the bottom. The weaver picks us up and starts wrapping us around these pegs back and forth until we are 3 yards long, and then she turns around a peg and goes back up the other way. So she ends up making this enormous long loop that is 3 yards long. And we are all ordered and tidy, and right now we're all one thread. She does a complicated up and down pattern to create a cross, which is when one thread goes up and the other thread goes down, and then when we come back, the other thread goes up and the other thread goes down. And we're not worrying too much about what the cross means. We just know that the weaver will be able to pluck us separately apart at some point in the future. And then she ties choke ties on us, and these are little strings that go around the warp as it's on the warping board and pull very, very tight so that we are not able to tangle, even though as warp threads we really, really want to tangle. But there we are, tied off and tight and beautiful on the warping board, which is what she keeps calling this strange wooden conveyance. And then she picks up scissors and she cuts us off. And she brings us to what will be our home for the next couple of days or weeks, or in the case of a slow weaver, months, or in the case of a very, very slow weaver, years. And we're a little excited because, you know, we're far from the pasture now. And this weaver has decided to warp us back to front, which means she actually has 2 crosses. She has a threading cross and a rattle cross. But we're not worrying too much about what that means. We just know that those are ways to wrap the thread in order to make it less possible for us to tangle and change places in the warp. So the first thing she does is she wraps us around an octagonal beam. I've heard from other threads that this might be a round beam sometimes, but right now it's an octagonal beam. And we are wrapped very tightly around this beam that she calls a warp beam. We're wrapped so tightly and in parallel so we look like a giant spool of sewing thread. That's how tightly she puts us on there. Once we're completely wrapped up and there's only about a yard left of us hanging out, she pulls us up and over the back beam of the loom. We leave the warp beam where we're a beautiful large spool of thread waiting to be used, and go straight like a flat river up at a 45 degree angle and over the back beam, and this changes our orientation so that we are going horizontally into the heart of the loom. The heart of the loom is where the magic happens. The heart of the loom has, in this case, a single harness. And a harness is a thing that holds shafts. And shafts are what actually allow weavers to make complicated patterns very simply. A shaft looks a lot like a picture frame, but there are two metal rods that stretch across it. And suspended from those rods are heddles. And these can either be nylon heddles made of a material called Texolve, or, in the case of this loom, metal heddles. And metal heddles look a little bit like a needle that has the eye in the center. In fact, it's also called the eye in this case. It's the eye of the heddle. And us warp threads are being carefully, one by one, threaded through eyes on these heddles, and you feel a large hook come down and drag you through one of these eyes, and you've been put onto shaft 3, and you notice your neighbor was put onto shaft 2, and your other neighbor was put onto shaft 4, and you don't know what this means, but you know that when one shaft is lifted, some of you will go up, and some of you will stay down, because this is a rising shed jack loom, so that when the shed is open, and a shed, you've been told, is the hole in the yarn that the weaver passes the shuttle through when she weaves. You're not sure what your pattern is. It could be plain weave, which is over one, under one. You might be getting set up for a fancy twill patterning. You won't know until the weaver starts to weave. But you know that she has some plan in mind when she chooses which warp thread to go on which shaft. And as you're being threaded into your heddle, you look down and you see the jacks that give this jack loom its name. And they are a set of levers that cause the shafts to rise when a treadle is pushed. And the treadles are tied up to the jacks with nylon strings. And you can see the weaver pushing down on the treadle, and you can feel yourself lifting up into the air as she tests her threading. Now, you've made it through the heart of the loom, the mysterious box where all the pattern is created by placing different warp threads on different shafts, and now you're moving towards something that looks like a giant flea comb, except it's solid at both ends, so there's no open end. And you hear a warp thread next to you whisper, "It's the beater!" Another hook comes and grabs you and pulls you through this giant flea comb looking thing. You hear the weaver refer to it as a reed, though it's not made of reed, which is curious. It's made of metal. But you imagine that perhaps in the distant past, these giant flea comb looking things were made out of actual reeds. And it is on a frame that pivots back and forth between the heart of the loom and the front of the loom. You've heard other threads talking about weft threads, which the beater packs into place. But that's not your concern, because you are a warp thread. And so you have been slayed, which is what the weaver calls it when she pulls you through the reed with her hook. You've been slayed into a particular dint. She calls those little holes in the reed dints, and you don't know why. There are a lot of really interesting terms, but you don't know why they use them, but you imagine that it reflects a rich history of hand weaving. So you go through the dint in the reed, and the reed is set into the beater, and you're going forward to the beginning of the loom, and you can see the breast beam of the loom ahead of you. It's exactly like the back beam, except it's in the front. But before you get there, the weaver's hands come down, and they tie you around a rod that she calls the apron rod. And it is attached to strings that go over the breast beam and down onto another cylinder called the fabric beam. And it looks a lot like the warp beam where you started your journey. And you know from hearing other threads in the weaving studio talk that after you are woven, you will end up on the fabric beam wrapped around as beautiful hand-woven fabric. And you're very excited. You can't wait to get woven off. And the weaver is adjusting your tension and making sure that all of the warp threads are parallel and not crossed, and that they are threaded onto the proper shaft, and that the tension is even all the way across. And then she ties off the final knots, and there you are. You are a warp thread ready to be woven. And then the weaver goes into the other room to pick up her toddler, who is woken up, and she soothes him and comforts him and hands him off to her husband. And then she comes back. And you can't wait for the magic to begin. And so what the weaver does is she adjusts the tension with the back brake. And the brake is what holds tension in the system so that you're not slack. And so there you are, ready to weave, and you can't wait to become hand-woven fabric. And the next thing you know, the weaver pushes a treadle, and you're rising into the air as your shaft lifts. And you look down, and you see a boat passing underneath you. It's a beautiful wooden boat that looks a bit like a canoe, with a slot carved in the side. And riding on a metal rod in the middle of the boat is a bobbin. It looks a lot like a sewing machine bobbin on steroids, in that it's the same width but 4 inches long. And wrapped around that bobbin is more thread of the same kind you are, but you've heard this thread referred to as weft. And the warp threads kind of talk down around the weft, because everybody knows that weft can be weaker and slubbier and doesn't have to have the strength to go through the loom that a warp thread does. But you think the weft is beautiful. You can't wait to be made one with the weft. So the weft's tail end comes out through that slot in the side of the boat shuttle, and it slides underneath you, gliding beneath you, and leaves a trail of thread behind. And the next thing you know, the weaver drops her foot and the shafts drop, and suddenly the beater comes forward and pounds the weft into place. And then the weaver pushes a different set of treadles, and shafts 2 and 4 rise into the air, and you are left on the ground, because this is a rising shed loom. It creates that hole for the shuttle to go through by some of the threads rising and some of the threads staying down. And this time you're staying down, and the shuttle is coming back the other way, sliding over your body and trailing the weft behind it. The shafts drop, and the beater comes forward, and we're making fabric. The weaver continues to weave for a few minutes, and then she pushes down the brake, and suddenly you feel your body just go slack, just limp. You're just drooping in mid-air, and you're wondering what the heck is going on, when suddenly she reaches over to the ratchet on the cloth beam and pulls it forward a few clicks, and you feel yourself being pulled towards the cloth beam, and you know that your destiny as hand-woven fabric is going to happen. As she weaves the fabric, she moves the woven bit closer and closer to the cloth beam until you're wrapping around the cloth beam. After she has put some of you on the cloth beam, she tightens up the friction bake in the back again to get the tension where she had it before. And now she continues weaving. Treadle, weft, beat, return. Treadle, weft, beat, return. Treadle, weft, beat, return. Until almost all of you is woven off. And then the magical moment happens. You can weave no more. Only a little bit of yarn remains connecting you to the back of the warp beam. And everything that can be woven off has been woven off. And the weaver goes and gets a cup of tea and picks up her scissors, and she cuts you off the back beam. And there you are, hand-woven fabric. You started off life on a sheep in a meadow, and now you're beautiful woolen twill fabric. What's going to happen next is you're going to be wet finished to pull you and the weft closer together and create that wonderful loft. From there, she might cut you up and make a jacket. So you could start out as a sheep's coat and end up as a coat for a little boy. And that is the story of your life as a warp thread.
Could it be the weather outside or the full moon's light on a typical night? True. Maybe it's my attitude because I am a cynical bastard and I'm the mood for you. I'm a son of a gun, it's perpetual fun, and I'm young, I don't know what I'm saying. I got a one-string song, won't you sing along when you hear the chorus playing? You are everything I hate about this world. You are everything that's great about this world. Tarantulas is that they are a furry little pet that I have not met yet. You bet. Or maybe it's the monkey paw sitting in the corner of your kitchen that's granting all your wishes and
just watching your dishes.
I think it's time for a rhyme. I'd like a lemon or lime in my tab or some ice for my cola. My favorite monkey paw is under martial law, cause the Fed said he's spreading Ebola. You are everything I hate about this world. You are everything that's great about this world. Hit me with the solo now. This song is just a metaphor pertaining to the state of my emotions on a Tuesday night. Yeah. But what about the monkey paw tarantula, the soda in my kitchen in the full moon's light? And I think that you'll find I got a lot on my mind and I'm blind, I can't see what I'm saying. I got a power tie, gonna wear when I die, won't take no shit in heaven. Got a secret disguise, I'm gonna look in your eyes when I rise from the grave in the morning. I got a one-string song, God can sing along when he hears the angels warning. You are everything I hate about this world. What's great about this world? Hit me with the angels now. You are everything I hate about this world. You are everything that's great about this world. Hit me with the end now.
That was One String Song by Russell Wolf, and I just loved that song when I found it on the PodSafe Music Network because it was so perfect for the Audio Loom Tour because it was the song of one string, and because that line, "You are everything I hate about this world, you are everything that's great about this world," kind of defines my relationship with my warp threads. When things are going well, I just love them, and when things are going wrong, I just don't. So I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did.
So now that you've got some motivation and you have walked through the life of a warp on one loom, let's talk about some other looms. Some of these are what I call gateway looms, which mean they're a very easy way to get started with weaving without a lot of investment of space or money. One way is an old favorite of the 1970s, which has been brought back and revitalized and used in cool new ways, the inkle loom. And most inkle looms look a little bit like a hockey stick with pegs stuck in the sides. And inkle looms are for doing a very narrow strap that is warp-faced. And what that means is that the warp completely hides the weft. So whatever pattern you put in the warp is the pattern that you're going to see. And the weave is actually plain weave. It's over one, under one, over one, under one. You put half of the warp threads through some string heddles, and then you push up or down to raise or lower the shed when you're weaving. These days, there are some really portable inkalooms. In fact, if I were going to try to weave in the car at stoplights, I would be taking an inkaloom. My friend Robin Spady at the Seattle Weavers Guild developed a loom that she called an inklet, which is a very micro-mini inkaloom, and she uses it to make really beautiful jewelry out of silk threads. Her comment is, I could never afford to weave with silk otherwise. And shoestrings. I don't think she uses the silk for the shoestrings, but really funky, cool shoestrings. You weave a narrow little band, and then you can get some of that stuff from the hardware store that you use to shrink wrap around electric wires, and shrink wrap that on there, and you can make a very professional and cool funky shoelace you can find nowhere else. I really want to do that one of these days. You can make bracelets and necklaces. You can make those little things that hold your glasses around your neck. There's really a lot of very cool things you can do with a small, primitive loom. And inkalooms are so simple that with moderate woodworking skills, you could make one yourself. There are books out there that have directions and would be a great way to start weaving. And you can do some patterning with different colors and create blocks. And you can even do pick-up with an inkaloom. So you could actually do really creative patterns and create your own designs and artwork in the weaving. That's what the Guatemalan people do, is they have very simple looms and they do pickup with sticks where you create a special shed and do all kinds of interesting portraits. You could write your name on your shoelaces. You could just really get very creative with an inkle. So they're a small loom that's often dismissed by the weaving community, but would be a very cool way to get started with weaving and give you a lot of things to play with before you outgrew it. And then there's backstrap weaving, which is weaving old style. And this is a style of weaving that is still in use today in places like Guatemala. And if you are incredibly talented and skilled, even with a very primitive loom, you can get beautiful designs, just like with the Inca loom. They do amazing things in South America with backstrap looms. How a backstrap loom works is that there is a harness that goes around behind your back, the back strap, and comes around in front, and your warp is tied to it in the front. Then the warp on the other end is tied to a tree or some other solid object. It could be a doorknob, whatever. And you lean back to create the tension in your warp that you need to get a shed. And the shed is created usually by a rigid heddle, which looks a lot like a comb. And the teeth of the comb have holes in them, and then between the teeth are slots. And so you put a warp thread through a hole and a warp thread through a slot and keep doing that. And then when you pull the comb up, the warp threads that are in the holes go up and the ones in the slots stay down, and that gives you your shed. And then you can also push down and get the other shed. So very simple loom, but you can, again, do a lot with it. The only downside is if you're having to stop and chase after a toddler, it can be a little tricky to untie yourself, which is, I think, how inkles were invented. I think the inkle loom is the portable version of a backstrap loom. Next, also a simple loom, but again, giving you very rich weaving opportunities, are tapestry looms. This is how you can paint pictures with yarn. And tapestry looms don't have to be involved. You can buy a $12,000 tapestry loom, but you don't need to. You can go down to the hardware store and create a PVC starter loom for about $2. Similar to tapestry looms are Navajo looms. Navajo weavers use a special variant of tapestry weaving, and all you need are some sticks and some rocks, or these days people like to use copper pipe frames, and you can create really beautiful heirlooms. That's what's amazing about weaving and fiber crafts in general, is that because it's been done for so long, there are techniques that using minimal equipment, you can get really beautiful things. The more involved the equipment is, all it does is give you speed. Just because you're using a simple loom doesn't mean that you aren't a real weaver. In fact, many of the world's best weavers today are using the simplest looms. If you've ever seen handwoven silk from Laos with a beautiful intricate patterning that is all picked up with a stick, with a pickup stick, and those threads that are like thinner than sewing thread, hats off to them. I mean, those are the real weavers in the world. Similar again to Navajo looms are bead looms. These are usually much smaller, and I like to call them bring on the glitz. Bead weaving is fun because it glitters. And you can use beads on a regular loom, but bead looms are usually set up to do that kind of weaving where you string the beads across and then push up and use the bead holes themselves like the shed and put your string through there. And I did quite a bit of bead weaving before I got into regular weaving. Really beautiful stuff. Again, great for jewelry or hat bands. Really lovely. A variant on backstrap weaving and inkle weaving is card weaving. Now, I mentioned that with these simple looms, you can use a pickup stick to pick up warp threads and make a special shed that you can do patterning with. Well, back in the day, the Vikings thought to themselves, well, gosh, there's got to be a better way to do this. And I don't know if it was in use before the Vikings, but I know the Vikings are known for their card weaving. What they've done is they have a square card and they poke four holes. And then when they do their very simple loom, say they're using a backstrap loom with card weaving, they run the warp threads through one of those four holes. And those cards actually act as shafts for card weaving. And you turn the cards to raise or lower the threads and create the patterning. And you can get some really intricate, beautiful patterns out of card weaving without the trouble of having to use a pickup stick. So very, very lovely thing. Next on my list is kumihimo, which is a Japanese art, and it is actually braiding, not weaving. But I've noticed that weavers just lump it in with weaving because it's so darn cool. And what it is you have a stand. Imagine a step stool with a hole cut in the middle. Silk flows out of that hole onto bobbins, and then you manipulate the bobbins around the hole in a somewhat complicated way in order to create a braid that comes down out of the bottom of the hole. And there's a weight on the braid to keep everything in lovely tension, and the bobbins are weighted as well. You can also do kumihimo just on a round card. Cut yourself a round piece of cardstock, cut little slits in the side and a hole in the middle, and then you can wind thread either on some like floss things like the cross stitch people use, those embroidery floss cards. Use those as your bobbins, because when you're using some cardstock kumihimo, the tension comes from stuffing the threads into those little notches. I wouldn't use silk threads for this. I'd probably use something like a ribbon knitting yarn or some smooth pearl cotton to do my first card kumihimo. But you can create some really lovely braids, because the Japanese have been doing kumihimo for centuries, and so there are books out there with just gorgeous, gorgeous patterns in them. Really lovely stuff. Then there are nail frame looms. This is a very simple loom you can make yourself. Take a picture frame and pound some nails all the way around of it. And then what you do is, as you're warping the loom, you're also weaving over and under. And there is a loom put out by Carol Lee. It's a triangular loom designed for weaving big, huge, beautiful shawls. And I'll have a link to her site on there so you can see how the nail frame loom looks. And you can do them either rectangular or triangular. And they're very simple. They're a little bit time consuming because the simpler the loom, the more time it takes to weave anything. But again, would be a very easy way to get started weaving. And nail frame looms are great for knitting yarns. I used some of my first hand spun to make a gorgeous shawl on a nail frame triangular loom. And it turned out really lovely. So I'll have a link. There's also another manufacturer, Hazel Rose Looms. I'll have a link to her site as well, because Carol Lee sells a really big loom for doing shawls, and this Hazel loom is much smaller. You could use it to make squares for an afghan or make shawls for your teddy bear, and that would be a really good way to get started. But again, you could make your own. Just take an old picture frame or build a frame out of wood and then put nails around it. And going into the description of how you use this loom is a little bit more involved than I want to here, so I'll try to find a website that shows that. So go look on the show notes at www.weavecast.com, and hopefully I'll have something there for you. Then there are rigid heddle looms. I already described one rigid heddle loom, which Ashford is coming out with the knitter's loom. Rigid heddle looms work on the principle that I described for backstrap weaving, because a backstrap loom is a rigid heddle loom. It's just that modern rigid heddle looms have taken away the need to tie the warp to yourself in a tree, in that they create a loom that has a warp beam and a cloth beam, and what goes in the middle is a beater and a rigid heddle. And it, just like with the backstrap weaving, the rigid heddle has slots and then little strips with holes in the middle, and you pull up to create a shed or you push down to create a shed. And as with any other loom, you can use a pickup stick and do your own designs, and you can do really funky things with rigid heddle looms. But primarily, rigid heddle looms are used to do plain weave. Finally, on the step to floor looms, the next closest thing to a floor loom is a table loom. And a table loom is very much like a floor loom. It has the warp beam, it has the fabric beam, it has the beater, it has harnesses and shafts. The only thing it doesn't have are treadles. So with a table loom, you have to flip levers usually in order to raise the shafts. And a lot of people like table looms for workshops, or if they have a really small apartment, they can do all the fun instant patterning stuff that you can on a floor loom, on a table loom. The only problem is, because you're having to move your hands from the shuttle beater area to the lever area to raise and lower shafts, it's a lot slower, and you don't really drop into that smooth weaving rhythm that you can with a floor loom. So personally, if I were going to go to the expense of a table loom, because they can run anywhere up to like $200-$300 just for a table loom, I would look around first for a cheap floor loom in my area, because if you buy a used floor loom, it can be comparably priced. I've seen floor looms go from anywhere from $100 to $500 on the low end. I mean, sure, you could buy a used floor loom for $12,000, but why would you? And many really solid 4-shaft floor looms can be found inexpensively, usually in your area, because floor looms can be expensive to ship. And so you can actually get started with weaving without a huge investment of money. As I just described, all those gateway looms are looms that you can do for next to nothing. If you're doing kumihimo on a card, or you're doing a nail frame loom you made yourself, or backstrap loom, or you can invest more and do a floor loom. So now I'm going to talk about floor looms. Again, like I said, if you can find a used floor loom in your area, it's the perfect way to start. A lot of great floor looms are out there not being used right now because they've been inherited by people who don't know how to use them, or they're in the hands of weavers who have since moved on to bigger, better things and don't want a 4-shaft anymore but haven't taken the time to sell it. So if you look around and ask around and post some notices, you probably can find one in your area. When you're looking for a floor loom, things you want to check out are: you want all the wood to be solid and non-rotting. Ideally, you want to weave on it before you buy it. And there are 3 main types of floor looms that you'll find. The most common is the jack loom. That's what I described in the audio loom tour. And this can have either a rising shed or a sinking shed. Usually, it has a rising shed, which means that the shed is created by taking some of the threads and lifting them up and leaving the other threads down. And this creates a slightly unbalanced shed in that the top threads, because they're traveling a farther distance, are under more tension, and the bottom threads that are just staying flat are not, because when you raise those threads, they're having to travel a farther path because they've been raised and there's a greater angle there. But jack looms are easy to manufacture and are very popular in the U.S., and they are generally smaller than the other types of floor looms I'll talk about, and easier to tie up because you only have to tie up the treadles once. You'll understand more when I talk about the next type of loom. The next type of loom that you might find, especially if you find a really older loom, because in the 1800s there were a lot of counterbalance looms around. And you can get an idea if something is counterbalance because there'll be pulleys up at the top. And the way a counterbalance loom works is that when you open a shed, both the top and the bottom open, which is good because you get a bigger shed. But the counterbalance looms can be tricky to weave unbalanced fabrics on, meaning if you're weaving plain weave, everything is great. Half the threads go up, half the threads go down, and the pulleys are balanced because half the shafts are going down and half the shafts are going up. If you're trying to weave an unbalanced weave, like a 1-3 twill, where one shaft goes up and 3 shafts go down, it's not going to be as happy because the pulleys are going to be unbalanced. So that's why it's called counterbalanced. Now, there's another type of loom that was big in Scandinavia and solved a lot of the problems of the counterbalance loom. This is called Countermarsh, and it works similarly to counterbalance in that when you step on a treadle, half of the threads are pulled up and half of the threads are pulled down, creating a much bigger shed and with better even tension because all of the threads in the warp are now traveling the same distance. It uses lambs to solve the problem that the counterbalance had of needing the same number of shafts going up or down. It also tends to be a lot quieter to use than a jack loom, because in a jack loom, you need some weight on the shafts to push the shafts back down after you've treadled them up, and that weight usually comes from metal heddles, which can kind of clash around a bit. On a countermarsh, that return action is caused by the leverage of the loom, and so you can use string heddles or TechSolve heddles more typically, and so it's generally quieter. Though, I should warn you that countermarsh looms tend to be quite big. I haven't seen small portable workshop countermarsh looms. They may exist, I haven't seen them. So next, I'd like to talk about some resources that are available on the internet and elsewhere. There are several Yahoo groups devoted to weaving that are very helpful. There's one called Weaving, which is for beginning weavers and a bit chatty, but there are a lot of great, talented weavers on there who help newbies and are just wonderful. I've learned a tremendous amount just reading their posts. Next is Weave Tech, which reduces the chat by insisting that every post be on topic completely, and it tends to have more of the high-tech production weavers on there, but again, a lot of great information. Just lurking, you can learn tons on Weave Tech. And finally, if you're looking to buy a used loom or for weaving equipment, there's a group called Weaving Sales Ads. I've mentioned them before, but it bears repeating. There's the Spinners and Weavers House Cleaning pages. All of those are great places to find looms and other gear that you'll end up wanting and needing. And finally, you can check on the Hand Weavers Guild of America for a weaving guild in your area. The best way to learn weaving is to talk and interact with other weavers. Fortunately, weavers tend to be amazingly generous with their knowledge and time. You know, the way knitters are. So if you've stuck it out this long, congratulate yourself. You now know quite a bit more about weaving than you did before you started. And if you are a knitter or someone who has never woven, I hope that you will give weaving a try. I really enjoy it. I've found it very satisfying and entertaining. Next month, we have a wonderful interview with Molly Freeman, who is known for her gorgeous warp-painted fabrics, which then she made garments out of. And for the last few years, she's been getting into embellishments, which means she takes this gorgeous, already perfected hand-woven cloth and then stamps and stitches and paints and does resists and just makes it something out of this world, celestial, and makes wearable art garments that are really amazing. If I were as little as she is, I would have run off with several of them, I assure you. Since next month is almost here, hopefully we'll have something fun for you on April 1st. Keep your fingers crossed. Until then, even if you're a knitter, I hope you'll get warped, because everyone knows you have to be warped to weave. Still not convinced you want to try weaving? Think you're going to stick with hand knitting instead? Well, okay, here are some great knitting podcasts that you might want to listen to.
Calliope, epic poetry. Cleo, history. Erato, love poetry. From ancient times to the present day, those seeking truth and knowledge have invoked the nine muses of Greek mythology to help guide them on the path of creativity. Throughout the whole of history, where there is evidence of extraordinary insight, inspired beauty, or astonishing ingenuity in the world, there we will find the muses. Their presence is an invitation to all creative artists to embrace the fires of inspiration and fill the corners of our lives with beauty and meaning. I'm Brenda Dane, inviting you to join me for Series 2 of Cast On, a podcast for knitters. The Knitting Muse, beginning March 31st at www.cast-on.com.
Calliope, epic poetry. Hi, this is Donnie Tolson with Time to Knit, speaking to you from beautiful Durango, Colorado. Come check out my new podcast, Time to Knit, and listen to my tales and trials of knitting. I have stories and, you know, different experiences, and I have to admit, being a new knitter, some follies. So come check it out. My blog address is www.timetoknitpodcastblog.blogspot.com. And when I say time to knit, it's 2 with the number 2. So go to my blog, and there are a couple links on there, one to iTunes directly, and the other one down a little lower is to everypodcast.com. I'm on most of the podcast search engines, so come find me, check me out, and let's just enjoy life. It's all about the journey. Bye for now from Durango, Colorado.
Hello and welcome to Secret Knitting. My name is Daniela. I'm Czech nationality, living in Cologne, Germany, and I will try to introduce you to some knitting patterns that you might not know or you forgot that they exist. And because almost everybody likes secrets and surprises, I will be telling you how to knit the patterns without giving you a picture of it. The picture will come a few days later. In the meanwhile, I would be happy about receiving the photos of your works, which I will publish on the website www.maschenkunst.de. So let's get the needles ready and be surprised!
Hi, I'm Lisa Akers, and I'd like to invite you to join me for my new podcast called Musings of a Peaceful Knitter. If you like to knit or crochet for relaxation, for a spiritual connection, or for the peace and stillness you find when you work with your hands, then this is a podcast for you. Each episode will bring you thoughts for knitting, thoughts about knitting, and thoughts from listeners around the world. The first episode launches March 1st. Until then, here's a thought for you. Take time this month to knit with a new friend. You'll both learn something new and make a personal connection that you just can't make through the telephone or the computer. For more great thoughts on knitting, subscribe to my podcast at peacefulknitter.com.
Hello, my name is Carrie, and I am doing a podcast called Knitwit, Rantings of a Rabid Knitter. In it, I tell stories about knitting, spinning, living with fiber animals, and general observations on life. Come by autumnbreezedesigns.com and let me tell you a story.
Hi, this is Caroline over at the Fibercast. If you enjoy knitting, spinning, weaving, or other fiber arts, we invite you to come over and join us. We might be talking about drop spindles or wheels.
Drop spindles are a favorite topic of mine.
My wheel is a Lendern double treadle.
We might be talking about fiber animals. I have alpacas and I love to talk about those, but we also talk to other people who have other fiber animals.
Actually, the first fiber I ever spun was Angora, and I didn't even know it was, I was spinning Angora.
We talk to other knitters as well.
And I'm now about to start knitting about 8 yards of lace edging.
I like to share interesting websites that I find online.
I wanted to tell you about a new free pattern I came across.
And you might just learn something new.
1,000 cocoons is about a kilogram. It's about 2 pounds of cocoons.
1,000 cocoons is about a kilo.
Yeah, and that makes about 4 ounces of prepared silk.
So come on over to the Fibercast and join us. We'll be happy to have you along. Thanks for listening.
All right, I am Kate from Aussie Knit, and I'd like to invite you to join me on my podcast if you're interested in Australia, knitting in Australia, or just hearing me talk with my goofy Australian accent. So come and find us at aussieknit.blogspot.com, that's aussieknit.blogspot.com, and join me on Aussie Knit. See you soon.
Hi, my name is Guido Tuskenstein, and I'm the host of It's a Pro Man. It's a knitting podcast about a guy and his yarn issues. I will be featuring ramblings from me about knitting and my issues with knitting and the way people look at me on a bus whenever I take out my knitting needles. I'll also be featuring music from the Pod Show Podcast Safe Music Network. So please drop by and take a listen. It'sapurlman.com. ItsApurlman.com. Well, thanks for listening.
The Knitting Newscast is a podcast about the knitting world. It includes the latest knitting news along with reviews of knitting websites, patterns, books, stitches, yarn, and a whole lot more. Come listen to this fun, entertaining, and educational podcast on knitting by Rhonda Bell from Austin, Texas at www.knittingnewscast.com.